So, good morning, everyone. It's always such a great joy and privilege to be here. So, I want to thank you for inviting me to be here and to be presenting to you on my appreciations of the book that we have for this reflection today. But it's just a great joy to be with such wonderful people like yourself. So, thank you for this kind invitation to be a part of this consortium. I just wanted to put in a little plug before we start. Mary, I know we were at the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation dinner the other night. Mary is very active in that. And as you saw, Christine brought this thing about the nuclear weapons. And we had a dinner a couple weeks ago, wasn't it? 2 weeks ago, I guess, Mary. And we had a wonderful speaker there, Doctors of Responsibility, wasn't it? I think that was his name. But anyway, so we give out a peace award every year to someone who represents something about the elimination of nuclear weapons. We've given it out to the Dalai Lama, to Desmond Tutu, to Carl Sagan, a number of different people. So throughout through 25 years. And this past year, this past 2 weeks, we gave it to this doctor who works for the elimination of nuclear weapons, and wonderful, wonderful man who works with the United Nations as well. But one thing I wanted to say about that, and this is just a side issue from my talk, but you know, nuclear weapons, after the Cold War ended, you know, we kind of thought, well, the nuclear weapons, well, that's kind of a dead issue. That's not a big deal anymore. Well, we still have the weapons. And in fact, we're still developing more and more weapons. And as you know, if we read it in the papers all the time, the issue with Korea, nuclear weapons is not a dead issue. I mean, it's just right in front of our face here, and it's going to come back. And so, actually, 2 years ago, it sounds like this microphone's kind of going on and off. That's fine. I'll be fine. But so anyway, 2 years ago, when Pope Francis came to the United States, we, as the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, we were going to give this award to Pope Francis, the Nuclear Peace Foundation Award to Pope Francis. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, you have to get him to be able to accept it. So we went to the Vatican. We actually went almost to the highest levels of the Vatican, to Cardinal Martini, who's the Secretary of State. And we got into him, and Pope Francis had made some statements in Vienna, Austria, against nuclear weapons. He mentioned that he might be coming out with an encyclical about nuclear weapons. And so, of course, we were never able to present him with this award, but we thought, if we could, you know, he wouldn't even have to come to Santa Barbara. We'll send it to you in Rome. But we thought, what an incredible gift this would be that he would accept this. But maybe that was an impetus in all of this. But so, because of those statements that he made, and he just came out, and I think they're meeting in 2 weeks, the Pope is calling together a delegation from all the world to talk about nuclear weapons. This is incredible. We were invited. The Nuclear Age Peace Foundation was invited to be participants at this delegation, and we are sending one of our people over there, Rob Wayman. He will be going on, and he will be representing the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. What the Pope's hope and vision is to gather the non-nuclear nations and have them sign a treaty that they will not go nuclear. And hopefully, through the United Nations, this will put pressure on the nuclear nations who have nuclear weapons to resist the development, or at least some kind of treaty, whatever it's going to take, but to make a non-nuclear world. You know, the doctor gave an incredible, incredible talk, and I don't want to go into all of this, but he said, and I'll just briefly, he said, when we're looking at nuclear weapons, nuclear warheads today, the United States has over 8,000 nuclear warheads ready to go at any moment. Russia has about the same number. China has the number. Okay, Pakistan has nuclear warheads and a number of others. But he said, if we even look at the lesser nations, for example, India and Pakistan have limited nuclear warheads of about 110 each. And he says, if they had a limited nuclear war between these two nations, which is very, very possible, very possible. We're not even talking about Korea here. just between those two nations, the devastating effects would almost destroy the whole world just through those two countries and in a limited nuclear war. They have 110 nuclear weapons. We have 8,000. 8,000. The decimation is incredible. I mean, it would destroy the ecological systems of the world. It would destroy climate. It would destroy everything besides the fallout. So anyway, I don't want to talk about that, but anyway, just the importance. So if we could pray for this meeting with Pope Francis. This could be a real opportunity of grace. So pray for this, and maybe the Pope will come out on some statement. Maybe he'll come out on an encyclical. He said he would. He said he'd write an encyclical because this is such an important issue. So it's not a dead issue, if you will. So anyway, but thank you for that. Okay. So I'm so honored to talk about Father Richard Rohr's book, The Divine Dance. Thank you. Okay. So before I begin that, as Anne mentioned, I like to think of myself as a poet, but I'm kind of a starving poet, but not really, as you can see. So I wrote this poem, and I'd like you to share. I'd like you to, and so this is what I put together for my appreciation of the Trinity. Okay, so I'd like this to beginning our beginning reflection. I call it "Thee in One, Three as One, Fallen to Earth." I use for my reflection. This is the beautiful season of autumn, and I love autumn. The leaves are falling from the trees, maybe not so much here, but in my home state of Washington and other places where there's a change in colors, you know, in the trees. It's such a beautiful time. And I love the image of leaves falling from the trees. They fall so gently. And the leaves are so beautiful. They've changed colors. You know, and they're just a beautiful of elegance. If you walk along and you see these leaves on the ground, you know, it's just such a wonderful thing. You know, as little children, we used to love to rake up the leaves and then jump in the piles of leaves. But what was that about? Why do kids want to jump in a pile of leaves? There's something sacred there. Something sacred. So that's my image. So this is a poem I've written. Walking among autumn leaves, ground bound, falling from above. Heavenly remnants given now to earth. From one tree casting many brilliant arrays, color in color, beauty in beauty, grace in grace. Joining a sacred dance, three as one, each in each. Memories of coming back home, thought forgotten. One could walk for a whole day and never see the same. Finger of God, gift of life, held in the eyes of beholding. Trinity, most holy, Thee in one, three as one in Thee. Less said, better, as poets are silent in the divine dance. That's my inspiration. And that means my appreciation. And I love, as poets are silent, in the divine dance. To speak of the mystery of the Trinity is like a poet who has nothing to write or to say. There's too much. I'm silent. That's the way I feel. That's what I would like to be in this presentation. It's a poet who is silent, who has nothing to say. It's just a mystery that's unfathomable, unexpressible. That's how I see the Trinity. So in that light, I'm going to say some things. So I'd like to break this up into maybe three parts, and I don't know if we'll have time for all of this. I'd like to give a little introduction here, and then I would like to... So I prepare to talk. So I'm not going to talk off the top of my head because this is too profound. I don't want to leave that to just my own thing. So I have prepared a talk. So I'm going to read the talk to you, okay? Because I think for me, that's the clearest way I can express it. Something that I've already clearly thought about and tried to put into words here, okay? So I have two talks. One I entitled, The Holy Trinity, The Furnace of Love, The Fire in Your Soul. And then the second one, if we have time, we might not, but if we do, I wanted to bring it into a Franciscan perspective, okay? So I wanted to talk about St. Bonaventure, okay? One of the leading theologians of the Franciscan order, okay? And we refer to him as the devout teacher. And he taught a great deal about the Trinity. And much of our understanding of the Trinity in our Franciscan tradition comes through St. Bonaventure. So I would like to speak about him in his book, The Journey of the Mind of the Soul into God. It's very complicated. It's high, complicated theology. So I'd like to offer that to you. So I'd ask you to try to stick with me if you can, okay? I think what I'm going to present is kind of maybe a little bit esoteric somewhat. But I hope it reflects something of the mystery. And I wanted it to be esoteric because this is a mystery of the Trinity, okay? So first of all, my kind of beginning remarks. So thinking about the Trinity, I came back to an experience that was very, very profound for me. And this took place when I was down in Mexico. And I have a great love for the Huichole Indian people. And the Huichole Indian people live up in the mountains. They're very, very isolated people. They live up in the mountains in Nayarit and parts of Zacatecas and parts of Jalisco. But they live very obscure lives up in the mountains, okay? Now, when I first went down to Mexico, I have to say, I wasn't sure at all why I was there or what I was doing. I was pretty befuddled. So I did feel God called me there. And I felt God called me there to be with the Huichole Indian people. And I could talk for an hour on that, so I won't go into that detail. But why I was there in Mexico, I would come so many times to think, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, my Spanish wasn't that good at the beginning, and I wasn't even sure what I was doing. And sometimes I would just kind of get confused and befuddled and say, you know, maybe I should just go back to the States. I mean, what am I doing here? Anyway, something amazing would always happen when I had those experiences. And the amazing thing is, I would run into a Huichole Indian somewhere, totally out of character. I mean, they live up in the mountains. I'd be walking in Guadalajara. I mean, amazing thing. I would turn around, maybe I would drop something, I'd turn around, and there was the Huichole standing right there, looking at me like, I felt they were always saying, you know, you belong to us, and we're here to help you, and we're watching you. You might not think we're watching you, but we are watching you, and we are here to support you. I felt overwhelmed by that experience, and it happened continually through my time. So one day, I want to tell a story. So one day I went up in the mountains with this friend of mine. Now, getting up in the mountains was an incredible experience. First of all, at that time there were no roads up there. There was a road, but it took about 2 days to drive up the road because it was a gravel road, dirt road. So the way you got up there is you found a pilot who would fly you up in his little private plane. So we found this pilot. We asked him if he could fly us up, and he said, well, I don't know. Okay, maybe I will. And anyway, we kind of went back and forth. And then we found out he wasn't he wasn't trained in instruments. And there's a lot of, you know, without being trained in instruments, you can't fly through clouds, you know. And he said, well, I'm not trained in instruments, but if we see a cloud, we'll just have to try to fly around it. So I got in this plane, and we got in this cloud bank, and we couldn't get out, and he did, and I thought, okay, Lord, I guess I'm going to die right here. This is it. Well, anyway, we got to this little village, and I was with this friend of mine, and we flew in. We landed on this cornfield. We flew in there, and it was out of the village, and so we got out of the plane, and we told the guy, we said, you know, can you come back in a week? We'll be waiting right here at 10 o'clock in the morning, a week from today, we'll be waiting here. Will you come back and pick us up again? So he said he would. But anyway, so we were walking into the village, and this friend of mine said to me, he said, Do you think anyone knows we're here? And I turned to him and I felt this very deeply. I said, yes, everybody knows we're here. This whole town is watching. They're watching us right now. We couldn't see anybody, but I felt they're all watching us. They know we're here, and we're here. So we were up there for a week, and it was an incredible experience. But one experience I wanted to share with you was very profound. So one day we were walking out in the country, and we were walking along this little creek. And we walked along this creek, and there was a Huichole Indian woman, and she was sitting there washing her clothes in the creek. Very traditional. Very traditional. And I was just so taken. There was just, it was something incredibly beautiful about her. She had one little baby there, and then she had a daughter who was about 7 or 8 years old. And they were just sitting there. Now, Huichole people, you don't talk to, okay? They're very shy, quiet people. Many of them don't even speak Spanish. They speak their Huichole language. So I wasn't even speaking to this woman, but we sat down on the side of the creek. And I just was watching this woman do this beautiful thing of washing her clothes in the creek. And I was overwhelmed at the beauty and the tenderness of all that was taking place here. I sat there for about half an hour, and she didn't say anything. She didn't even get up and look at us. And I was sitting there, and it was just so overwhelming. And finally, this little girl of hers comes over to me and to us, and in Spanish says, "Do you want to see where God lives?" I thought, what is she talking? She says, "I will show you where God lives." So she took us aside and she said, "Follow me." We left her mother. Now, can you imagine this? An Indian woman letting her 7 or 8 year old daughter go with these two strangers that she's probably never seen before, Anglo people, doesn't know a thing about them. And the girl took us off back into the woods. And we started walking down this path following another little tributary creek. And we kept walking and walking. I thought, this mother is letting her daughter do this? And she took us to this cliff. And there was a waterfall there. And the water was coming over the cliff, and it was falling on this pool there in the rocks. And the pool, and I swear this is true, the pool was in the shape of a human heart. And the little girl said, "This is where God lives, in this pool." Oh, it was incredible. Incredible. That's one story. I used to row crew. You know what crew is in college? So I rowed for the Seattle University, and actually for a little bit of time I rowed for the University of Washington, although it was called the Lake Washington Rowing Club at that time. So we rowed together. I rowed 4 years. The first year we were terrible. I mean, terrible. Every year we got a little better. My fourth year, when we graduated, we won second place on the West Coast in the Western Sprints. We beat UCLA. They'd never been beaten before in that year. And we lost to the University of Washington, who went on to win the national championship, beat Harvard in the Eastern Sprints. So during my years of rowing crew, you get out there with 8 guys in the morning, and you're rowing on a lake, on Lake Washington, and you're all messing up. So crew is an incredible sport. It's probably the most team sport of any sport that I've ever experienced. And I have to say, I always felt some of the greatest spiritual experiences I've ever had were sitting in a crew boat, rowing crew. And so you have to work with getting all in time with one another. And the 8 guys in the boat, or 8 oars people, you have to become one body. And not only one body, you have to become one spirit. You have to think the same. You have to act the same. You have to feel everything that's going in the boat. If you feel someone out of time and they're sitting behind you, you say, "Come on, Frank, you're out of time. Get in time." You know, you just feel it. But some things happen, and this only happened a couple times to me, but it was phenomenal. And that was when everything is perfect, and the water is like glass, and you are perfectly in time and you're rowing together, all of a sudden, as the boat is cutting through the water, it begins to whistle. And the first time I heard that, I was overwhelmed. It means everything is perfect. You're in perfect unison, and it gives out this high-pitched whistle that the boat is just cutting through this water. It's incredible. So that's what I'd like to present to you, this sense of unity and togetherness. That is something of the Trinity. Okay? So I'd like to tell you a story. This is a story that was told by Kierkegaard, Søren Kierkegaard. And he loved this story. He loved this story. So the story is that there was this king. And the king was very, very powerful in his kingdom. But he was also greatly loved and revered by all the people in his kingdom. And one day, he was visiting this one village. And the people were so, they were kind of afraid of him, but lovingly respectful of him. They would never do anything against him. And so he came into this village, and everybody was so respectful and loving, and they were kind of bowing down to him. And all of a sudden, this man comes from the back, a poor peasant man, and he turns to the king and he says, "Give me your blessing." And the people were astounded. "Who is this man? How can you ask for the king for a blessing?" And the man said, "Give me your blessing." And the king said to the man, "Come here. Come here. Get into my chariot." And the man was astounded. "What am I to do?" So he got into the chariot. And he said, "I want to take you to my castle." And the man was just dumbfounded. And he said, "Come to my castle. And I want you to make you a part of the royal family. And then I want you to marry my daughter. And then I want you to become second in command of all of my kingdom. I will give you my blessing. That's my blessing. To enter into the fullness of all that I have, I'm going to give to you." The peasant thought for a minute. He thought, "Wait a minute. I don't know if I want this. I don't know if I want to enter into your life that much. I mean, I like to drink with my friends. And I don't want to take a bath every day. And I don't want to be part of this royal family." So the peasant said, "No, I don't want this blessing." And the man left. I think that's part of the Trinity. God offers us a blessing. We ask for a blessing. And He's willing to give us everything. The question is, are we willing to accept it? Are we willing to accept it? So I'd like to say something about the book here. And I say this very, very reluctantly. But I think I want to say this. And I don't know how to say this. So first of all, I love Richard Rohr. I love Richard Rohr. He's our Franciscan brother, and I love him deeply. And I know Richard. I know him personally. Okay, and he is a man of God. There's no question. He is a great, great man of God. And I know, just between Richard and myself, I know there's a deep bond of love. Okay. And I cherish that. And Richard has been in my life at times that I really have needed him. And I'm so grateful for Richard. So he's a great, great man. Okay? And I have the highest regard for him. Some of his books, I thought, oh, these are incredible. Where does Richard get all this information, this knowledge? Where does this all come from? You know, Richard doesn't have any advanced degrees. He just got, a master's of divinity. You know, where does he get all of this? And he writes on such different ideas. I mean, men's spirituality, you know, addiction, you know, scripture, contemporary, you know, systematic theology. He talks about all this stuff, you know. But I have to tell you And there's times that I just take, I just gobble up Richard's books. And I just, you know, I just listen to him over and over again if I have the tape. I just love him. But there's other times, and I say this very, very carefully, there are other times I kind of question Richard. And I don't know if I should. I think to myself, Richard, are you being a little bit arrogant? Now, please forgive me for saying this, but I think, you know, where do you get all, you know? And so that's kind of a little bit of a idea that I want to bring forth in this book. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but the provincial of the Guadalupe province, which Richard is a member of, Father Jack Clark Robinson, and they lived together, Jack and Richard Rohr, in Albuquerque for a number of years. And I asked Jack once, I said, you know, what do you think about Richard's writings? And he said, you know, to tell you the truth, he says, I've never read one of Richard's books. I don't know what to say. I've never read. So I kind of wanted to say that. I have to say that because, and pardon me for saying, I kind of felt that about this book a little bit. I thought, Richard, I think you are taking something that is too inexpressible and you're putting it in too simplistic language. Now, that's my prejudice. I may be totally wrong on that. And if I am, I stand to be corrected. And I found myself, so consequently, I didn't read all the book. I read a part that I was to speak on, but I found it a little bit, that was my, and I just thought to myself, Richard, you're being a little bit, maybe too arrogant here or something. That's a prejudice on my part, okay? Please don't tell Richard I said this in this secret because I love Richard. But anyway, what?
He did not like it. He spoke and someone else.
Exactly. And there's a difference. And that's the way, I hate to say it, that's the way Richard writes books now. He speaks it, and then they write it, they And I think you can be flippant, you know, speaking to someone, but if you have to sit down and write a book, and thank you, and I never thought of that, but maybe that's the difference. It seems to be maybe, okay. But so that's kind of a little background, personal background to this. Okay, I'm still kind of in my introduction things here. But so... There's a movie that I love, and I don't know if any of you saw it. It came out in 1968, Children of the Lesser God. I'm sure some of you, yes, Glory. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And the story is, the actors are William Hurt and Marlene Martin. Marlene Martin was an actress. I don't know if she's still acting. She's deaf and dumb. She can't speak or hear. She's the first actress to receive an Oscar. She won an Oscar for this award, for this movie. She's the first one who was deaf and dumb who received an Oscar for her acting. And so this is an incredible story. Just briefly, and I do want to play something here out of that movie, okay, because I think it's profound. The story takes place that William Hurt, his name is James Lead in the movie, goes to this school and he's going to teach deaf children. Okay, it's an isolated school, and he's going to teach his deaf children. He has a real calling for teaching deaf. So he goes up there, he starts teaching, and he sees this woman, and her name is Sarah, okay, and that's Marlene Martin. Sarah is a custodian there. She's the janitor. She kind of cleans up, and you can tell she has a chip on her shoulders. She's angry, and she's angry with life. And she's just off by herself, just cleaning, and in a very way, trying to isolate herself from the world. So James becomes attracted to her. So what's going on with this one? How can I get into her head? So he meets her, and he starts talking with her and trying to pull her out of herself. And in the course of this, he falls in love with her. And she somewhat kind of falls in love with him. But she can't quite figure out what's going on. But he's just taken by this woman, okay? So at one point in their relationship, so he has a great love for music, and he loves Bach. And he just lives on Bach. You know, it's his passion in life, and he loves to listen to the music. They have an argument, And the argument is that he wants her to hear the music. And she says, I can't hear the music. And he said, well, how can we ever be one if you can't hear what I love? And so they have this dialogue, okay? And I want to present it to you. The sign in sign language for unity is this. Okay, it's two fingers coming together, holding up three. And she's saying that. We can't be this. We can't be this. I'm going to see if I can get this, pop it up here. It might take a minute here. I'm going to try to let you listen to it over this, okay? This is just a little over 2 minutes, okay? And I wish you could see it because she's talking, but you can't hear what she's talking. But you can, then he kind of translates back what she's saying, okay? Here we go. Let me start this over again, okay? Okay, here we go.
No one's ever going to speak to you again. Come on. How are you going to manage? Everyone's always told me who I am. And I left them. She wants. She thinks. And most of the time they were wrong. They had no idea what I said. Wanted. Thought. And now they won't. Well, that's all right. I'll buy that. No, I won't. How could I? Because I love you. Love has nothing to do with it? That's wonderful. Then what the hell have we been doing? Watch your hands. It's hard to avoid them. This sign, to connect, simple, but it means so much more when I do this. Now it means to be joined in a relationship, separate but one. That's what I want. But you think for me, think for Sarah, as though there were no I. She will be with me. Quit her job. Learn how to play poker. Leave Oren's party. Learn how to speak. That's all you, not me. Until you let me be an I the way you are. You can never come inside my silence and know me. And I won't let myself know you. Until that time, we can't be like this. Join.
Who's ever going to speak to you again? Come on.
So that idea of entering into the silence of another person, I think that captures what the Trinity is. You know, as I was growing up in my hometown, and the sisters would speak to us in my grade school years of the Trinity, they always said that it's a mystery that we can't even begin to try to understand. So I would ask that, them, what does that mean? Or more importantly, what did it mean to me as a small boy growing up in Sumner, Washington? What was this mystery that we couldn't understand? It didn't seem difficult to me when the sisters explained it. What three persons living in one? And yet the idea of mystery and the understandable mystery sunk into my consciousness as, what is this mystery that is so far above our understanding? Is it some kind of equation, 3 and 1 or 1 and 3 in some kind of advanced calculus understanding that takes so much to try to unravel that if you don't know the principles of the practice, you can't put it together? And yet it didn't seem above my thinking, the image of three persons together as one. So what is this mystery that exceeds our understanding? It's not the numbers, 3 and 1. It is the one thing that binds them together. That's the mystery. It is their love that creates this trinity of oneness. This is the mystery of love. Can you define it? Can you understand it? Can you grasp it? It's impossible to know what this thing is, love. In the context, the mystery of love is a mystery of longing, that is to become one with another person. Think about love. Think about the impulse to love, to want to be one with another person in complete intimacy, to know that I am not alone, and that I am held in the arms of love, the embrace of another. How tantalizing this is, how fulfilling, how all-consuming is this desire. And how this oneness completes another's life to the fullest. There's nothing more that is needed nor wanted. This is the mystery. This is the profound myself that we are called to understand, and that we can never, ever be able to fully understand until we rest in the love that is not separated, but a love that is one. One in person. One in relationship, one in the personhood of everything that exists, and of all that exists centers around as it being the source and the fulfillment of all that is life. I've heard it said, and this is profound, that if all of a sudden the church were to announce that the theological mystery of the Trinity was suddenly no longer held as a matter of our belief, that if all of a sudden they came out with an announcement, you don't have to believe about the Trinity anymore. Forget it. This person says that probably no one would consider this to be a major stumbling block to their faith, or would even question the announcement. They wouldn't think, oh, so what? But it's the foundation. It's the very foundation of our faith. In many people's minds, the mystery of the Trinity is not that essential to our practice of our faith. And yet the mystery of the Trinity is the most essential dogmatic principle of faith that we hold. At the very root of our Christian faith is the mystery. Where does God dwell? Where does God dwell? In the entire New Testament, the answer to this question remains conspicuously absent. Where does God dwell? It remains conspicuously absent. But Jesus does gesture towards the revelation to the experience of the Trinity, as there is no God outside of otherness, and that there is no otherness without mutuality. That God is both other and yet dwells in complete mutuality of being one with the one. Basically, that is to say that God lives and is at the heart of love. Pulsating love and life, and love by its very act of purpose and nature. There are maybe three symbols that can help in our understanding of the Trinity. I'd like to say, first of all, the Trinity is womb. A womb. It is water and it is wind. The first person of the Trinity, God, is the womb. The one who generates, nourishes, and renews life as its source and its author. Thus from the womb flows the second symbol as that of water, the metaphor of birthing or cleansing, healing, refreshment. And through the waters of baptism, all become one with God in Christ. And through Christ, one with all of humanity in the process of self-fulfillment and self-revelation. Finally, And of all the biblical symbols for the Spirit, the third person of the Trinity is wind and our breath. The wind is totally invisible, known only by its effects. You can't capture the wind. That's an image of mystery. Mystery is that you try to grab the wind, a handful of wind. You can't do it. It's only known by its effects, and it blows wherever it wills. It moves, changes in its powerful force, and still can refresh as a gentle breeze. But the work of the Spirit is never more pervasive than in spreading the work and the life of Jesus. In the famous icon of the Blessed Trinity, the Russian painter Ruvla, it depicts three persons sitting at the table, which I know you've all seen. A dish of food lies at the table. But the thing that immediately strikes one is the fact that at the very front of the table, there is a vacant seat that no one is sitting at. The vacant place is meant to convey openness, hospitality, and welcome. The vacant place is meant for us. That's where we belong. It signifies God's invitation to us to share in the life of the Trinity. This is where God dwells. And this is where we are invited to live in God at the table of unity of love. It has been said that when we pray, the Blessed Trinity listens not merely to who we are in our own needs. This is powerful, I think. It does not listen to who we are in our own needs, but it looks at the deeper reality of who we are in our common union with the triune God. We pray for our needs. It's not looking at our needs. It's looking at who we are in union with the triune God. And so it is no fantasy that when those who pray and know how to listen in communion with God, they hear God speak to their hearts because they stand in relationship. This is an assurance that God dwells in us and that we dwell in God and we dwell at the very heart of God. From this we see that God is love. And our response can be one of trust in God and love that binds us together. As St. Paul says, help one another. Be united. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace will be with you. So I'd like to go into this talk. And this is called The Holy Trinity, Furnace of Love, Fire in the Soul. And I want to... What time should we break? Maybe this would be a good time to break, okay? Okay? Okay, good. Okay. When should we come?